All right, hello, coffee makers, not coffee takers. I am Dr. Joseph J. Burt Miller Jr. of the Cyber Coffee Hour. Alfredo and I are two cyber experts from Mount Vernon, New York, sharing with you our experiences in this field and also the experiences of others so we all can learn, elevate, and ultimately realize that we all belong in this space. So for today's show, we're going to discuss the psychological impacts that affect cybersecurity professionals and the importance of sleep to be effective. And to help break this all down is the CEO, founder of the Solution is Sleep LLC, Dr. Angela Holiday Bell. Now, Dr. Angela Holiday Bell is a board-certified physician, certified sleep specialist, author, speaker, and founder of the Solution to Sleep LLC. As someone who formerly suffered from insomnia herself, she understands the transformative power of good quality sleep and how obtaining this regularly can lead to a happier, healthier, and more productive life. She has been featured on local and international television shows and networks such as The Dr. Phil Show, ABC News, and WGN Television, spreading her message about the power of good sleep. Dr. Angela Holiday Bell, welcome to the Cyber Coffee Hour.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Awesome. So, I know here in the DMV area, I know you're out in Chicago, and as we was talking, like, we've been dealing with a ton of rain this past week or so. We finally broke through, but how's it been for you? Like, you know, I see the sun shining coming in. I look like you know, it looks pretty nice over there. How's it for you?
Yeah. The last couple of days have been great. It's been pretty warm, nice and sunny. We also dealt with a stretch of rain that was not ideal, but luckily I think the tides are changing. We're finally getting into some springtime weather, so it's been good.
Yeah, hopefully all this rain will amount to some good flowers. All right, so the articles that we're going to discuss here, the first one we're going to take a look at is the psychological impact on the lives of cyber attack victims. So this is authored by Stanley Clark of PaintedBrain.org, dated 27 August 2023. So I'll start with the excerpt here. So due to the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, more of people's day-to-day activities have taken place at home. They include virtual offices, distance education, online shopping, doctor visits, and digital entertainment. However, this phenomenon has increased the risk of cyber attacks, including attacks on people with mental illnesses. The Federal Bureau of Investigation stated that the number of cyber crimes reported from January to May 2020 was nearly the same as that for 2019. So while network security equipment is critical for boosting cybersecurity, human factors are another essential component. So several factors that affect potential victims of vulnerability includes, you know, online activities, personal traits, individual behavior, and attitudes about technology. So I'm gonna just do a quick stop here. And so when we're discussing just as far as like the cybersecurity professional, doesn't matter like what level, you know, that you're at, whether you're entry level, just getting started, or, you know, mid-career, or you're leading a full team or a whole organization. There are going to be stresses or inherent stresses that come with the job, and also outside of, you know, maybe like things that, if you have like family, you know, things to do with family and things like that, like things outside of the job that still you can't dismiss, but also, you know, so you compound that with the work that has to be done, the everyday demands that come with the job. So I know you're not in cyber, but as far as for your profession, like what are some of the things that you feel, or do you see some similarity as you look at this, as you deal with, when you're dealing with within your field, which pertains to like sleep and sleep studies and things of that nature?
Yeah, I think so many people can relate, whether you're a cybersecurity professional or other professional, or even just responsibilities, like you said, at home. There are a lot of stresses and anxieties that come with that. And anybody can be impacted by the ramifications of cybersecurity, like attacks and things like that. And I think ultimately the stress that comes along with that and the stress load, I call it, that you bring to bed with you, can significantly impact your sleep and then your functioning the next day in all of those roles. So it's kind of this kind of cycle that you can fall into when these things that you have to deal with in your daily life impact your mental health, your stress, and then subsequently your sleep as well.
One of the things I gathered from this article is that psychiatrists say that they need to understand the impact of cyber attacks on patients, especially concerning, you know, web-based mental health services amid the pandemic. People with mental illnesses, including severe psychiatric conditions and seniors, are at higher risk of online financial fraud. With pandemic-related challenges like social isolation, these individuals may struggle to cope with cybercrimes. The prevalence of online activity increases the likelihood of psychological effects from such attacks. About one third of American adults are constantly online. I have to stop right there. I think that's a lot, because when we say that, you know, just being online, it's not even just, I guess, more the traditional sense where you're sitting in front of a PC, you know, keyboard or mouse. You know, we have these little computers in our hands, you know, mm-hmm. our phones or tablets or whatnot. And even video game and consoles, honestly, because video game, you know, these next generation consoles now, they're all internet capable. Those are things you still have to monitor. Pretty much everything is almost, I think every aspect now, look, you know, every component will have like an IP address now at this point. So, with that said, I think that even exacerbates the issue that, you know, pretty much no matter where you turn, there's always going to be a way to, you know, that could affect, that have that psychological effect on someone. And how much, I guess, for your perspective, when we're talking about sleep, you know, how much does that affect someone, you know, how much of an impact does sleep have on someone that may be dealing with some of these stressors? Can sleep help alleviate some of these things, or does it require something a little bit more?
Yeah. So, like I said, there's such this cycle when it comes to things like this, because when you are under a lot of psychological or physical stress, it can impact your sleep. But sleep also affects your ability to deal with these stressors. And I always say sleep creates or builds resilience against stress. So oftentimes, you know, there are situations or things that we can deal with and say, okay, how can we better deal with the stress and anxiety that comes along with the situation? How can we lower this load? But there are some things that we don't have control over and we can't necessarily lower it. And so sleep can be a tool to build resilience against the stress that you're going to encounter from day to day. So I think when we think about these things, obviously putting safeguards into place, monitoring how we are encountering these things, how much time we're spending on it, do we have things to protect us against these attacks, is going to be one way to deal with it. But then making sure that we're devoting the time necessary to getting good quality sleep so that even if we are experiencing these things, we're building resilience against the stress that can come along with that. Because again, some of these things we're not going to be able to control, but if there's a way that you can safeguard your mental health and your physical health against it, of course, it's going to put you at greater, give you a benefit or an edge in terms of dealing with it. And sleep is one way to do that.
So this article breaks down there's like at least a couple few different psychological effects that are experienced from cyber attack victims. So it goes into emotional trauma, and I think you kind of talked about a little bit of that, guilt and shame, feelings of helplessness, number four, eating disorders, and five, sleep disorders. And now we'll stick with the sleep disorders, of course, as that is your specialty. So with sleep disorders, victims may experience insomnia due to stress and worry about, you know, data theft or financial loss. Disruption in sleep patterns exacerbates stress levels, creating a vicious cycle. So I think, as you mentioned, when you have I guess when things are out of alignment, you know, so to say, as far as like in your life, when you have so in this scenario, someone experienced a cyber attack and, you know, it caused them to, you know, to their bank accounts to be emptied. That's a big stressor right there. Because now you worry about like, man, how am I going to pay the mortgage or the rent? Or, you know, how do I get the money back? So that could affect that. I can see how that can affect someone's sleep. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as like, so outside of that point, just as far as just doing the day-to-day work that, you know, when we're talking about cybersecurity professionals doing the work that they do, if it gets to the point, and again, I think this could definitely translate to any field, honestly. You know, I guess any high stress environment where you have to work, you know, day in, day out, it is going to have that effect. I would assume it's going to have that same effect on sleep. You know, especially, you know, some people talk about the kind of taking their work home with them, where they, you know, they're constantly thinking about it and not be able to really separate the two. That I would think that can contribute towards, or I guess to, a sleep disorder. But so even with that type of behavior, when someone, let's say someone is like, where you're working overtime, or say, though, hey, I'm gonna finish it when I get home, maybe on the surface may seem harmless, I would think, but do you see that as something different? Like, do you see that as like maybe like a red flag? Say, hey, you know, this could lead to something bigger later on if we continue down that path.
Yeah, definitely. Because I think when you bring work home with you, or you don't have those boundaries surrounding work, or don't know how to cut off and transition, then you also bring work to bed with you, and your brain starts to ruminate and think about all of the things that you need to get done, or things you didn't do right, or what you have to do tomorrow. And fundamentally, sleep happens when your brain waves slow down and there's a state of relaxation. And that's never going to happen if you're constantly thinking about work. So it's okay to work hard. Like, I'm a physician and, you know, I went through residency, we worked very hard. But what I had to learn, especially throughout my own insomnia struggles, is I had to separate my work life from my sleep life. That can start with something as simple as dedicating a bedtime routine to winding down and transitioning from the stress, the anxiety, the to-do list, the task jumping of the day, to the calmness of the night, to give your brain and your body that time to wind down. So set aside a dedicated time period. 45 minutes to an hour will be ideal, but even if you just have 30 minutes, take that time to completely disconnect, to not look at emails, not look at your computer and phone, ideally, at all. Do something like reading a book. Meditating is a great way to kind of get those brain waves to slow down, to trigger the relaxation response, and allow your brain that transition time to go from whatever you're thinking about that's happening during the day, the stress and anxiety that comes with work, to the calm and peacefulness of the night, so you can help to protect your sleep.
So, and I think you make great points, because I even thinking about, I think about when I was pursuing my doctorate, and the crazy hours I was putting in just to get the dissertation done, and I know my sleep was jacked up, like just wasn't my normal sleep schedule, and a couple of things I saw, you know, as a byproduct of that, I definitely had weight gain from that, because, you know, I wasn't, you know, like I said, I wasn't sleeping as I normally do. That caused me to even, like, I was eating at weird hours, you know, staying up later, things of that nature. I would say probably even feeling irritable, definitely at times, because, you know, going, you know, staying up late doing the work, and then also still, you know, still working a day job, so still got to get up and, you know, go to work and things of that nature. So it can, now thankfully, of course, when I'm done, I was able to get back to a more, I guess, normal, at least for me, a normal sleep pattern. But when we're talking about this, this is something that's like, I guess, sustained, or like a, what do you feel is the threshold where if someone is carrying on this type of behavior that it can become, I don't want to say permanent, but, you know, it becomes harder to, you know, revert back.
Yeah, I would say that time frame is different for everybody. So we define chronic insomnia as difficulty falling asleep, staying asleep, or waking up earlier than intended at least 3 days per week for at least 3 months. So after 3 months of really struggling with sleep, now you fall into the category of chronic insomnia, and that is a lot more difficult to recover from. But there are some people who deal with sleep issues for a month, and it's, you know, becomes more difficult. So it's hard to say. So I try to counsel not to fall into bad sleep habits at all. And if you do, really try to recover as soon as possible. It's staying down that's more of the issue, right? So if there's something that happens, you find yourself falling into these bad habits, really try as much as you can, as soon as you can, to get back on track. Because the longer you engage in these bad habits, the harder they're going to be to disentangle later on, and can then take on a life of their own. And then it really becomes more of a significant process to try to undo the root cause of things and get you back to sleeping well.
So now our second article, I think, still plays into that. And this one is titled, "The Security Industry is Booming, but its workers are struggling with a number of major issues." So this is authored by, I hope I'm not jacking up his name, Syed Fadlpasek. I'm sorry. it's a Tech Radar article dated back in the 16 October 2023. I'll start with an excerpt from here. So research by the Charter Institute of Information Security based on a survey of some 300 cybersecurity pros found 4 in 5 or 80% said they have either good or excellent career prospects. Furthermore, 84% described the cybersecurity industry as growing or booming. But being overwhelmed with work, constant overtime, and the stress that comes with it, as well as the responsibility, are issues that can't seem to go away. Looking at this article, it kind of breaks down. I kind of broke this down as a couple different, at least six different categories. As far as when we talk about those critical issues. So number one is the long working hours. Yeah, a significant portion of the respondents reported they're working more than the legal limit of 48 hours per week. You know, that's like 8% are working over 55 hours, which is considered borderline unhealthy by the World Health Organization or WHO. And of course, that indicates that's an indication of like overwork or maybe even a culture of overwork within the industry, leads to burnout and decrease job satisfaction. Number two, stress and sleep loss. So many cybersecurity professionals experience high stress levels, half admitting to staying up at night due to work-related stress and workload. Additionally, a third lose sleep over concerns over cyber attacks, indicating the psychological toll of the job. So I'll stop right there for a bit. So from my personal experience, for my job, I definitely watch the news a lot more, maybe more than other people would, than they have to for their job, because especially when you're hearing like international actions, I'm just trying to keep very service level, but you're just watching, I guess, international activity that have a direct effect to the U.S. In terms of cybersecurity. I'm watching it. I have to pay attention to it. So even though I'm not even at work, I'm still thinking about work because I see some of the things that are happening. But as far as like with your field, do you see some of these behaviors or the things that are going on? Because especially we talk about the long working hours and you know going over. I definitely see that within the cybersecurity field and. I wonder, like, especially when I see that with those who are in like more senior positions, they're definitely working a lot, you know, a lot of long hours. And I know, like, our cultures try to say that, you know, I guess working hard means you're working, you know, later hours, you know, first one in, last one out type of mentality. But do you think that mentality is good? Like, do you think that's sustainable, you know, or, you know, over a period of time?
No, definitely not. I think that we come from a culture that wears sleep deprivation and overworking as this badge of honor. And right. People don't understand that they're actually doing the opposite of what their intentions are, which is to show up as their best selves, work hard, get more done. But research shows over and over again that not getting enough sleep, not devoting time to rest, whether that's physical or mental rest, actually causes you to be less efficient, less productive, and make more errors. So even though you're trying to show that you're a hard worker and you're dedicated, you're actually probably producing less work and taking more time to do it. So it's actually better to focus on investing in your sleep in order to produce the best work for yourself. And you don't have to, you know, work 50, 60 plus hours a week in order to do that. When I started suffering from insomnia, I was in residency where there was a cap of 80 hours per week, meaning you could work up to 80 hours per week, theoretically, no more than that, but it was over an average. So like there was a week I worked 110 hours and because the next week I worked, you know, 70 hours, I was okay, that averaged out. So it was definitely one of those things that they were like, oh, you don't have to sleep, whatever, you're dedicated. And I had to untrain my mind to feel like that is what I needed to do to prove that I was a good doctor, and had to learn that it was okay to sit down, to devote, to rest. And because of that, I became a better doctor. I was more empathetic. I was able to think through things more. I was less irritable and all the things that I wanted to be because I found a way to really invest in my.
Yeah. And I was just going to ask, like, so and I think you pretty much answered the question, but that did you notice a difference between yourself when you were working? Because that's when I heard you say 80 hours in a week. Because at first I had to process that, because normally it's 2 weeks, but you said 80 hours in 1 week. Wow. Yeah. But did you notice a difference in behavior, like within yourself, from working those long hours to, and then after, when you made those adjustments, like did you see or feel a difference?
Absolutely.
When you made that change?
My whole life changed for the better. I think initially, before I started to make those changes, I was just in survival mode. So I was getting things done. I was taking care of patients, but I wasn't happy doing it. And I was just doing what I needed to do to survive day to day. Okay, what are the actual steps that I need to take? What are the things on my to-do list? Okay, let me just get through this and survive. Whereas after I started to rest, I was thriving. Like I said, my relationships was better. I was more empathetic. I was able to think through things more and hit those next level things as opposed to just checking off boxes to get through the day. And I think when you think about the doctor that you want taking care of you, I would assume most people will want someone who's thinking clearly, who doesn't have this brain fog, who's not just trying to make it through. Also, people don't understand that staying up for 18 hours or more is equivalent to having 3 to 4 drinks within 1 to 2 hours, depending on if you are a man or woman. So you would not want your doctor, your cybersecurity professional, whomever, to chug a few beers before starting work, right, to take care of you. However, many of us will regularly sleep less than 6 hours per night. And honestly, that's the same thing. So you have to think about it that way. The faculties, the control you have over your physical and mental processes is going to be diminished when you're not getting enough sleep. So I think that's a good way to kind of put things into perspective.
You know, I've never heard that comparison as far as, I guess, the alcohol, I guess just being inebriated. It's almost like being inebriated when you're not getting enough sleep. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's very interesting. The remaining issues that were mentioned within this article talked about economic concerns. And I think we kind of touched this bit even from the last article, you know. Of course, if someone's dealing with any sort of economic stress, that's going to keep someone up. Resource constraints. Smaller organizations with fewer resources to combat smaller cyber threats, they're particularly vulnerable. Not being well suited to defend defend itself, and also the resources they have to protect. That could be a big stressor. Number five is retention and job satisfaction. So retaining cybersecurity talent is challenging. So with maintaining talent is a primary factor causing people to leave security jobs. So some other factors include limited opportunities for progression, poor working environments, issues with colleagues, and a lack of task variety. Has an issue with a colleague ever been an issue for you where he like caused you to lose sleep or want to move on?
Well, yeah. So I would say, you know, again, going through our training, I think there's this hierarchy and sometimes abuse of power from higher up. And that can be stressful and cause you to lose sleep, especially when you feel that you're powerless in the situation. You can't really speak up because no one's going to listen and you're afraid of retaliation or what that might lead to. So absolutely, that can lead to ruminating over those things, which can make it more difficult to fall and stay asleep.
The last one here. So need for support and skill development. So this includes proper training and skill development opportunities for attracting new talent to alleviate pressure on existing teams. So pretty much just making sure that your current workforce is skilled and trained, so that way it's not left to like one or two, a couple of folks within your workforce to handle any particular issues. So a lot of time, especially, I'm not sure if you see it within your field, but especially when we talk about within cybersecurity, and I think a lot of organizations, they're looking for that unicorn. So like that unicorn is one who could pretty much do everything. So let's say you do find that person, you're going to burn that one unicorn out, because if everyone else, on your team is not meeting the standards, then either you got to make sure that they're being trained properly, or you have to make changes. I mean, because that one person who is doing the work at a very high level, at some point, he or she is going to level out with everybody else, because they're going to be like, for one, they're going to get frustrated, or they're just just going to be just plain tired, you know, from mm-hmm. doing all the work and not really getting much help. So that's definitely a problem either way.
Yes.
All right. All right. So this was good. You know, I really enjoyed this. I think when we're talking about, I don't think sleep is talked about enough or enough attention is being made when we talk about the quality of sleep or the importance of sleep and how that affects or how much of an impact that has on our day-to-day jobs. You know, as you mentioned, you know, having good sleep or good adequate sleep just makes us a better professional, be able to respond better and able to do our job. We're not yelling or screaming anyone's heads off or anything like that. You know, having that sleep, be able to perform better. And also even with that, there are other things as well as, you know, I think a lot of those health concerns that could come from that if you're not getting, you know, good sleep. Because as I mentioned with my experience, not sleeping well, you know, like I said, that definitely led to weight gain for me. And, you know, and I would say I even noticed, or I recall at times, if I stayed like really late, if I was like really pushing, let's say like I had maybe 2 hours of sleep or something, so something crazy. Like I felt like my brain was like, yo, what are you doing? Yeah, I definitely felt that. So no, yeah, sleep is important. No matter the job or the mission, got to make sure we get adequate sleep.
Absolutely.
All right. So now that we got that out the way, this is where we've transitioned to get to know Dr. Holly Bell more about you. Outside of the job environment, so I know you started the Solution to Sleep LLC, but outside of that, but do you? I understand like you do have a book or you have a book on the way.
I do have a book. I do. Yeah, it's called Sleeping on the Job: Proven Strategies to Optimize Workplace Performance and Personal Well-being Through Better Sleep. I think what we've talked about a lot already is just the significant impact that work has on your sleep life and then subsequently your sleep has on your work life. So there is this very intertwined relationship that is difficult to separate. So when I talk to people about sleep, I'm coming in and talking to corporations and workers and teams about the importance of sleep as it relates to performance. And I think that it's important to look at it through the lens of where and how you work. So my book is written for that reason. It talks about all the domains that are specifically affected by insufficient sleep, like your memory, creativity, productivity, problem solving that you need to succeed in the workplace, but then also how to set up your work life for a better sleep, starting from the moment you open your eyes and down to different work situations like working from home, shift work, all the different ways that life is set up as it relates to work and how to get your best sleep no matter what the situation is.
Now, I understand you're not a cybersecurity professional. But as a business owner, what are some of the things that you being responsible and maintaining, you know, whether the websites, you know, different online accounts that you have to maintain, how much of, you know, cybersecurity plays a role or how much do you think about that as far as just securing your personal accounts and things, especially with the book and everything like that? How much of cybersecurity has an impact in what you do?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a big impact, you know, more on a subconscious level, right? Like, I don't know that I'm necessarily thinking about it as cybersecurity, but it really is in terms of my website, my accounts, business accounts, and different things that I'm managing, and then different team members that are also managing those things. So there is an awareness of the importance of having those things protected and what happens if they're breached. And so, yeah, I think that's something that's kind of always in the back of my mind of like keeping those things protected.
Yeah, because honestly, you know, almost as I mentioned before, I'm constantly watching the news, and a lot of times when I'm watching the news, I hear about different organizations being breached, or you know, there's always some cyber attack, and then there was one actually. I forget the org. But basically, it's pretty much almost routine, which is really sad to say. But yeah. But it is true. I mean, it is something you do have to just maintain, whether you handle it yourself or you have a team that you hire to do the protection to make sure you are protected on all fronts. Bad actors, a lot of bad actors out there that are constantly working, trying to infiltrate systems, trying to take advantage and, to see how they could, whether for their own, political gain or some just want to do it just to say they did it, just for ego. Sometimes it's kind of like that as well. But definitely have to make sure our cybersecurity resources are up to date. So what would you say some of the obstacles that you've had to overcome to get to for you to that you had to overcome to arrive where you are today?
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing is I'm from inner city, west side of Chicago originally. So I came from a very underserved area. There weren't really many people that looked like me who were doing what I wanted to do. But I made the decision at a very young age that I wanted to be a doctor and stayed on that path, despite a lot of adversity that came with that and people assuming that I wouldn't make it or that I was crazy and I needed to choose something else and something that was easier. So I was constantly coming up against opposition of people not believing in me. And I had to make the decision myself that this was something I was going to do and stick with it no matter what. So I think that was the biggest thing. And then outside of that, the biggest kind of blessing, although it was also one of the biggest frustrations in my life, was my struggle with insomnia. And again, all of the effects that came from that, but luckily being able to come out of that came my passion for helping other people do the same.
When we talk about insomnia, did anyone, I guess, was there like a family history of that or, parents or siblings or whatnot, or were you the first one, or did you have like a family history of insomnia?
Yeah, I did find out afterwards that more of my family suffer from insomnia. I think some of that is newer though. Like there wasn't this awareness of it before I suffered from it. I think now so many people in general are suffering from insomnia and sleep issues that there are, other factors that contribute. But I do know there are some family members that have struggled more than others. And we do know that sleep struggles, insomnia is highly genetic and that it can predispose you to insomnia. But then there are often things and behaviors that you partake in that then kind of throw you over that threshold. So I think there were some struggles there. I don't think I had an awareness of it at the time that I struggled.
So at what point was like, so I know you said that, coming from Chicago that, you said you want to become a doctor. But at what point, for you that you just say like, all right, this is the area that I want to focus on, that I want to really tackle, like as far as we're talking about insomnia, because like did you know for sure that it was going to be that insomnia was the path that you wanted to take on, or maybe was there anything else, like did you have any other avenues that you thought about pursuing, or maybe you did start and stopped and was insomnia was the number one path for you?
Yeah, no. So I'm actually a pediatrician by training. So I decided when I was younger, I wanted to be a baby doctor. And I stuck with that. And during my training to become a pediatrician in residency is when I started to suffer from insomnia. And so in that process, decided that sleep was also my passion. Still, get trained and specialized in pediatrics, but then decided to also establish my business separate from clinics, so separate from diagnosing all kinds of disorders as I do as a pediatrician and taking care of kids, separate from that, wanted to help actually mostly adults sleep. So pediatrics is my passion, but also sleep suffer from that mostly because of my own struggle.
Now that's interesting. Have you seen like a fusion between the two with pediatrics and insomnia? So more so like, do you see that? I guess, do you see kids maybe could suffer from that, from insomnia, or is there like an age limit, if that makes sense?
Yeah, no. Kids can absolutely suffer from insomnia. What I've learned as it relates to kids and sleep is usually sleep struggles in kids are an effect of the parents and their choices and their boundaries surrounding sleep. So typically it is not having, you know, a consistent routine, not having a way that they're consistently handling nighttime awakenings, not having an establishment of what it means to like go to sleep at the same time, wake up at the same time. Often there's like co-sleeping and kids like to push the limits. And so how much are the parents giving in? So a lot of kids' sleep issues really come down to the parents. Adult sleep issues tend to be more related to obviously their own behaviors and choices, which is part of the reason that I wanted to focus on that more when it came to sleep, because it's more of a direct relationship with a person who's making those choices and more of a psychological component to it, as opposed to just kind of boundaries and limit setting.
Oh, that's very interesting. I didn't know you did pediatrics, but no, that's cool. So I have a real tough question for you. So what is your favorite coffee that helps you get you through the day?
Yeah, this is a very easy question. It is a grande vanilla sweet cream nitro cold brew with 2 pumps of cinnamon dolce syrup from Starbucks.
Wow. You got that order ready to go.
Yeah, that's pretty much all. And topped with whipped cream as well. That is my absolute go-to favorite drink.
Wow. Okay. I've had cold brew before. I don't really do it too much. I guess more so in the summer, I get like the iced coffee. But I know with nitro, even with like a small cup, I've noticed, I don't know if it's from Starbucks or from Dunkin', I can't remember. But yeah, like my hands were like shaking just like from the jitters, because it's like, it's like, I don't know, 100% pure caffeine. I don't know. It's definitely more potent than hot. I don't know how to describe it, but do you ever feel that when you have that that drink?
No. So honestly, caffeine doesn't really affect me. I think there are people who are fast metabolizers of caffeine, meaning they break it down so quickly that it doesn't get a chance to block the adenosine, which is the way that it works to keep us up. So I actually have no, like, I've never felt an effect where coffee wakes me up or keeps me up. I don't even have like an awareness of what that feels like. I know that's why most people drink coffee. I love the taste. I get nitro because I don't like ice in my coffee, and nitro is not iced. And it has like a smoother taste to it, but it doesn't actually affect me at all. It's sad because I want to know, like, there, if I'm sleepy, I'm just sleepy. That's another reason why I'm very dedicated to my sleep, because I have no recourse. If I don't sleep well, I'm tired all day. I can't just drink coffee and get over it. But it's nice because then, you know, I have a little bit more wiggle room around the timing of consuming it. So, no, I've never felt that feeling.
So about any, so what are some of your hobbies, you know, interests? I know you're from Chicago. Like, I know you've been following this basketball. One of your favorite sports, or like, what are some of your top sports that you follow?
Yeah, I don't follow it closely. I do like basketball. I actually used to play basketball when I was younger. My father and my brother are really into basketball, so I've gone to like some games and stuff. I don't follow it super closely. I like to work out a lot. I work out 5 days a week, so that's one of my biggest hobbies. I like reading, listening to audiobooks, and I recently got past few months ago, we got a pool table in our basement. And so that has become a hobby, because I'm trying to be like pool shark status. I feel that pool is a very almost like meditative type of sport, and it takes a lot of thinking, a lot of like critical thinking, more than I thought before. So I'm really getting into that.
Wow. So, okay. So now as you say that, I mean, are you out there taking people's money when you're out on the pool?
I mean, that's the plan. I don't know that I'm there yet. The plan is to be this unassuming person that comes in like, oh, well, how do you shoot this? And then, you know, just kind of run the table.
That reminds me of, it was a Fresh Prince episode where Uncle Phil, I think Will, like he lost everything. He lost a car, money, everything. So Uncle Phil had to come there to the pool hall and try to win it back. So yeah, Uncle Phil acted like he was complete garbage, like he never played pool before. And then when he baited him, he was like, all right, let's put some money on it. And then the guy's like, yeah, sure, this guy's horrible. Yeah. And then Uncle Phil brought out Lucille. And
exactly. That's my, I'm going to like break out Mildred or whatever and like have my personalized pool stick ready to go.
Oh my gosh. No, that's funny. That's cool. No, Dr. Angela, this has been great. I definitely enjoy you being here, especially, you know, for you to just share your time and your expertise, especially when we're talking about sleep and the importance of sleep in our day-to-day work lives. So I hope those listening are able to take something from this. And before we go, what are ways that our members, our listeners can get in touch with you, or even talk about your book, and how can folks get in touch with you?
Yeah, the best way is my website, thesolutionissleep.com. It has a link to my book, also to my social, LinkedIn, Instagram. I'm very active on both of those things, as well as email. I'm always open to receiving emails and connecting that way. So thesolutionissleep.com. Feel free to connect with me there.
Solution is sleep. There you go. All right. Now, well, thank you. This has been great. And thank you to you, those listening in. Thank you to tuning in to the Cyber Coffee Hour. So if you enjoy this episode, please like, share, and subscribe. Follow us on all of our platforms. You can find the Cyber Coffee Hour on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. That is a wrap, and we'll catch you on the next one. Peace.